for years. I mean, very unlikely that any new evidence would come to light in this.
It was a surrealistic story, put it this way.
The case will bury us all. It's just never gonna go away. We're gonna have this thing till the day we die.
Thank you both.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you, Jesse.
That is your Canada Land. You can email me at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. I've been posting on Blue Sky lately. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing from Tristan Capicchione. Max Collins is our director of audio. Sam Connert fact-checked today's episode. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV, 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we're talking about the news. We'll talk about Canada, the 51st state. Bad joke that just won't die. Talk about how the press is making it worse. We'll talk about the mess that Trudeau is leaving behind when it comes to the state of the news media in Canada. But he was just trying to help, Jesse. Also, gonna talk about the time Conservative MP James Moore made fun of Stephen Harper's weird helmet hair.
Doesn't sound to me like the pronouncements of somebody who's a friend, a partner, and an ally.
All that did not play out well for MP James Moore.
I was on an ISIS hit list. I had police outside of my house. I had my tire slashed. I had my house vandalized. I was harassed in public. I was spat on.
Wait for that. All right, welcome back to the show. James Moore, you were the Minister of Heritage. You were the Minister of Industry, both under Prime Minister Stephen Harper. Good to have you back.
Good to be with you.
Presumably, if we were to become the 51st state, I'm blue skying here, everybody. Don't come down my throat. Parliament in Ottawa would be our new state legislature.
So why not just merge the currencies, give two seats on the Federal Reserve to the Bank of Canada?
Canada, as a state, has a significant influence in the U.S. legislature.
James, I don't even know. Like, this dumb thing that Trump said is just like this snowball that won't stop. Like, did you read this New York Times column by Ross Douthat?
Yes.
Oh, Canada, come join us. I think that the argument made here, based on that he has, like, Canadian relatives, so he's in a position to say so. Here's what he says. If I were a young Canadian, I think I would feel the pull of America. Even if I were a young left-leaning anti-Trump Canadian, because what better way to actually pull Washington leftward, to add your votes to the coalition that just failed to defeat Trump? We should want to give up our sovereignty and become Americans so that we can become part of the American left to defeat Trump. This American chauvinism. But it's not just that. It's this deference to power, this cowardice that people have, where they start to take him seriously just because he's in power. Like, oh yeah, maybe this is a good idea. Like, maybe because Trump said it, maybe they are shithole countries. Maybe that's true. This is the guy who thought it was a good idea to stare at a solar eclipse. Maybe that is a good idea. Maybe everything he says needs to be taken seriously. How many editorials have been written about this 51st state idea now?
Well, yeah, but also the Donald Trump incongruity about what he wants with Canada, right? On the one hand, Canada is a national security threat, so we're putting tariffs against Canada because we can't trust them in their relationship with China. On the other hand, become the 51st state because, hey, no big deal. We're kind of just alike. Well, which is it? Are we trustworthy or are we not? Are we aligned or are we not? By the way, Canada, 40 million people, I think we would be at least three, maybe four states, not one state. So if we were to be three or four states, that would give us 6 to 8 senators. And if actually you start carving up the country and you look at it east to west, you can imagine probably two Democrats from British Columbia, maybe a split on the prairies. I don't know what would happen in Ontario, but in Quebec and Atlantic Canada, probably two Democrats from there. Chuck Schumer and the Democrats in the Senate would like that a lot. I don't know that the Republican majority would like it very much.
Look at you, though. What are you doing? You're playing the game. You're doing a little thought experiment. Everybody's doing this. Here's Politico. Here's how annexing Canada would change American politics. 31 states would lose House seats to make up for Canada's 40. Everybody's playing this little fantasy football here. What if we bought Greenland? What if we joined the EU? What if this? Like, why are we doing this?
You know, as a former political science major instructor for a little while, don't dissuade people from studying political science and imagining the possibilities of things. There are, the Canadian Journal of Political Science is full of peer-reviewed quality articles about what would Canada be like if we had an elected governor general? What would Canada be like if NAFTA didn't exist, if it did exist? These kinds of speculations can be interesting. I don't think that the Americans are obviously entirely serious about it. I think Donald Trump is having a little bit of fun about it. But on a serious side, by the way, I don't think Canadians find this funny. One tweet, okay, yeah, I get it. Yeah, we're in disarray. Justin Trudeau's quitting. Just become a 51st state. Yeah. Okay, I got it. That's funny. But, you know, the same joke over and over again, especially when it's done with, like, smarmy Jesse Waters on Fox.
I would consider it a privilege to be taken over by the United States of America.
It's not funny. We're a serious and independent country. We also, by the way, lost lives on 9/11. We fought alongside you on D-Day. We've got water bombers and Canadians risking lives from Quebec and British Columbia down in California right now trying to put out fires on your West Coast. That's what friends do. You have each other's back. And to sort of joke about us as though we're not that big a deal, we're kind of just big Alaska with some big cities and a little bit of French. It's not funny. We're an independent country with a proud history and a fantastic future. And frankly, with respect, don't talk about us that way. It's not cool.
Patriotism's always sat uncomfortably with me, but I tend to agree with what you say. It's not funny, A, because it's just not that funny. It's also not funny because the casual suggestion of imperialistic aggression to the greatest ally America has, the casual suggestion that maybe rules-based order and like the nation state doesn't matter, like borders don't matter and the concept of allies doesn't matter. That's what's not funny. What makes this really not funny is that if push came to shove, they could do it. And if we look at this in a 1 week, 1 month, 1 year context, it's a laughable, dismissible, stupid joke by Trump. If you were telling the history of the 21st century, some decades from now, and we're looking at the risk board of the world, and you're looking at this huge mass of land with 20% of the world's fresh water and all these natural resources and all of this land that's getting increasingly livable and farmable, and right to its south is the world's largest unprotected border and a massive military, and you told me, yeah, they just sort of took that country, because of course they did.
I worry, frankly, about the next 6 months in Canada and this country being pulled apart by the force of things that are happening in the discourse, because we do have a lame duck prime minister who is checked out. And when he does have something to say, he really doesn't have anything to say. And the truth is, in the conservative world as well, if we're honest, in the conservative world, Doug Ford is not on the same page as Daniel Smith and Scott Moe. Stephen Harper chastised and criticized Donald Trump and basically said, don't talk about us that way. You don't understand the nature of the Canada-US relationship.
Like, I have a real problem with some of the things Donald Trump is saying. It doesn't sound to me like the pronouncements of somebody, you know, as a wants a better deal or whatever, fine, but it doesn't sound to me like the pronouncements of somebody who's a friend, a partner, and an ally, which is what I've always thought the United States is for our country.
I worry about this drift in Canada. We had in Parliament a bill, a private member's bill put forward by the Bloc Québécois that says, don't touch supply management, dairy farmers in the province of Quebec. And don't touch supply management in any future trade negotiations with the United States. All the parties voted for it. Well, now you've put a giant red flag on the dairy industry in the province of Quebec for Donald Trump to go after. Like, phenomenal strategic move. And then on the other hand, you have Daniel Smith, who is, you know, raising alarm bells about energy in Alberta and that it better not be on any countervailing efforts against to counteract the American duties, and talking about national unity being at risk if Canada does do that.
You'd hinted a little bit earlier that if there is some sort of export ban on Alberta oil, that would precipitate a national unity crisis. From your perspective as Premier of Alberta, what does that look like?
Well, I can't predict what Albertans would do.
These are now constituent parts of the country. We've always been sort of regionalized economic realities with more north-south trade access to the United States than east-west within Canada. And I worry about Donald Trump now then starting to pick apart different regions of the country and picking regions of the country against one another and weakening Canada. Donald Trump knows how to distract the enemy and divide it against itself for the accretive benefit of the United States. And we are gifting it to him on a platter with what we've done on supply management and what Daniel Smith is now doing with energy in Alberta. And I worry about the next 6 months and the momentum that these things can have and what that means going forward.
It's a serious threat. I mean, the divide and conquer strategy seems to be that is what's happening. And if you look at Danielle Smith's behavior this week, she's very clearly breaking rank with the other premiers, refusing to sign off on this Team Canada approach to the tariffs. So that's how some elected leaders are behaving. And then you've got people who are, I don't know who elected Kevin O'Leary to go represent Canada to Trump at Mar-a-Lago. We will be talking about Mr. Wonderful after the break. I'm not necessarily in favor of hanging people for treason, but it does seem kind of anti-Canadian, like Kevin O'Leary of all people going and purporting to represent Canada.
I'm very fortunate. I have over 10 million social media followers, so I poll them myself. There's a lot of interest in understanding what the economic benefits of union could look like. The opportunity to create a common currency, which makes a lot of sense. I guarantee you now, 11 out of 10 Canadians would rather trade their Trudeau pesos for U.S. dollars tonight.
First, he said that, oh, yeah, I'm actually going to go and talk to Trump about becoming the 51st state. And then when he was piled upon for his unpatriotic, like treasonous sentiment, he backed away from that and just sort of leveraged this to, like, I don't know, promote his bid to buy TikTok. Why would we let, like you want to throw an egg at this guy if you see him on the street? Can we withstand this? Because it does seem like there is a weakness, whatever unites this country, that is fraying rapidly right now.
Canada and the United States, we do have a partnership that works. It's been the most prosperous economic relationship in the history of the world. It's been massively beneficial for Canadians. We have massively increased our quality of life. We've been able to afford our public health care system because of the economic benefits of the Canada-US relationship. I have no illusions about that. These things are all beneficial to Canada. But we also have our unique carve-outs, right? Culture is not part of NAFTA, in large part because of Quebec, but also because the cultural distinction of Canada relative to the United States is important for us. We have our own distinct culture policy. We also have water that's not a part of NAFTA. Why? Because it's a precious resource and we want to make sure it's managed and stewarded properly. That will come under stress, not just because of the California wildfires, but it's a constant and a real problem in Nevada and Arizona and New Mexico of access to actual fresh water for the populations there. So there are distinctions about being Canadian that are not American that are there. But we do have a military alliance. We are a part of the Five Eyes. We do have NORAD. We do have collective economic benefits under NAFTA, and we are both committed to the United Nations and a lot of its missions abroad. So we do have a lot of what Kevin O'Leary, to the degree that it matters, what he's talking about. And we also have boundaries of distinction between the two countries. I think what we need to do as a country now is refortify our ability to weather the storms of these kinds of tests against our economic interdependence as Canadians and not just our economic interdependence of Canada and the United States.
I'll be glad when this whole 51st state narrative is done. Though there is this one popcorn that I can only get at Trader Joe's that's got like this nutritional yeast on it. Yep. So, you know, there's perks.
I'm open to that. Maybe some In-N-Out burgers will be okay too.
Animal style. James, as you know, we duly note stories that people should pay more attention to. I'm going to duly note a story that I haven't read. Here are the stories that I have read. CBC, how much has Trudeau changed Canada? Globe and Mail, the highs and lows that will shape Trudeau's legacy. Policy options, Justin Trudeau's fiscal legacy. Narwhal, what is Justin Trudeau's environmental legacy? This is what I have not read. What is Justin Trudeau's free press legacy? What has he done with the media in this country? Nobody is talking about this, and I think it's a huge part of how he changed this country in ways that are really unique to Canada. It hasn't happened anywhere else. It ain't good. The Reuters Institute at the University of Oxford, they put out a big study. Overall trust in media among English-speaking Canadian population fell from 55% in 2016 to 37% in 2023. News consumption overall is down. There was a study out about public broadcasting around the world. Trust in public broadcasting fell everywhere around the world. But Canada, it fell by 17%. The only country where it fell by a wider margin was Britain, where BBC is having a huge crisis and they fell by 20%. 17% loss of trust in the CBC during the Trudeau years. Why am I connecting this with Trudeau? Because, like, you break it, you bought it. He has interfered in the media in ways that the federal government never used to dare to interfere. We cannot share news on Facebook because of this government's interference. And, you know, it used to be that when conservatives went on and on about the liberal media this, the liberal media that, you kind of roll your eyes because, like, how are you going to go and say the liberal media in a country where the biggest newspaper chain is Post Media, or, which is a conservative newspaper chain? Well, thanks to Trudeau, every journalist working for Post Media has a paycheck that includes, like, a significant amount of money, as much as 35% of their take-home pay paid out by the federal government. So now when Poilievre goes on about the liberal media, it hits a lot harder. It is kind of the liberal media in the sense that the liberals are paying the media to continue to exist. I know that the fact that all of this came out of efforts to save the media and help the media, this is politics. We judge it by the actual outcomes. And the outcome is these government interventions have accelerated the demise of news reporting and of the independence and the trust in the press in Canada, and our ability to even share media in Canada in ways that are outpacing those same trends everywhere else in the world. If it sounds a little personal to me, it's not because I have anything personal against this guy. It's because I work in this industry, both as a reporter and as a publisher. And, like, none of this stuff has helped. It's really, really been a dramatically negative trend during this period.
The absurdity and the counterbalance of saying we're going to fund independent small journalism such as they are and give everybody paychecks in order to pump all this stuff out, but then we're going to pick a fight with Google and Meta such that all this independent journalism that we're supposed to be stoking fires underneath won't be shared on these platforms because we're picking an unnecessary fight to nobody's clear benefit. So what are you funding and who's going to see it at the end of the day? It was never logical in the beginning, and here we are at full circle. So duly noted.
James, what do you have to duly note today?
A lot of people in the Liberal Party not running again in the next election campaign, a few conservatives as well. And a lot of the coverage about that has sort of seemed to be this gotcha thing, taking a pot shot at Justin Trudeau or not liking this or not liking that. I would like to see some really thoughtful, substantive exit interviews of former cabinet ministers, backbenchers, and actually have a thoughtful discourse about people who are leaving public life and explain why. Some proper substantive journalism, doing a bit of a deep dive on people who have been in politics for 2-3 terms, multi-years through differing dynamics, and they're leaving public office so that the next generation and the next cohort of people who are coming into public office or thinking about it have their eyes wide open about the good, the bad, the ugly, the great, and the awful of the opportunity and the privilege of serving in public office. Because a lot of people go in blind and they come out burned and their families pay the consequence. And we have sort of a downward seeming spiral of the quality of people who run for office because they're not properly informed peer to peer from people who have been in public office and the lessons they can learn from them.
That's a really good idea. If we were to put a chase list together, who would you put on top? Who do you want to hear interviewed the most?
I think Anita Anand is someone who we haven't heard from. A rising star in the Liberal Party, was rumored to run for leader. Now she's not only not running for leader, not running again at all. She's from Oakville, which is a relatively swing riding in Southwest Ontario. I think she would have a lot to say as a woman, as a visible minority, and someone who's experienced a lot. That would be an interesting conversation for sure. Frankly, you can go all the way back to the Harper years and people that I know and others, and have a little bit of time now and distance between, you know, now almost 10 years from when Stephen Harper was defeated and what life is like on the outside and the lessons learned now with a little bit of distance from their time in office. I think that's informative and I think that's helpful because too many people run for office and they think that politics is West Wing, balloon drops and ballrooms and big speeches and self-righteousness. It's not. It's a grind and it's tough and it's a lot of travel and it's pride swallowing and it's personal and there's a lot of burden. There's a lot of privilege and opportunity. You're well paid and the pension is great. But if you don't have clarity about the costs and the risks of being in public life, I think you're going to get chewed up pretty bad.
I'll say this, and the pension's a good point. With all due respect to the sincere desire to serve, I wouldn't wish it upon my worst enemy. I understand why we're getting such a lousy caliber of candidate. Like, I don't know why anyone would do it. Why would anyone do it?
Sometimes people run because they have a specific project and a specific peak, right? I think back to my days, a guy like Chuck Cabman, right, whose son was killed and he ran for office to try to change the criminal code. Well, that's something. Some people run because they're a mayor and they're frustrated and they really want that bridge replaced. Well, that's something. Sometimes people run because they want to be a voice and of self-righteousness and on the fight on climate change or the fight for Alberta energy. All that stuff is good, but the anonymity and the brutality of politics now online, where I disagree with you, therefore I must stop you, therefore I must defeat you, therefore I must crush your soul, and I'm going to make you cry.
And I'll show up at your house, and I'll swear at you in front of your kid.
I mean, I had that, and I had a gentle relative, I think, to what a lot of people have right now. I was on an ISIS hit list, and I had prime ministerial-level security for a while. I had police outside of my house, and I had special forces giving me security because I was targeted to be killed. I had my tires slashed. I had my house vandalized. I was harassed in public. I was spat on. I had a lot of that.
Sounds great.
Sounds
great.
Fantastic, right? So I'm 6'3 and a big guy, and I can take it. And like a lot of people have it pretty tough. We remember that visual of Chrystia Freeland going into an elevator and a guy, a big supposed tough guy, yelling at her and threatening this diminutive woman. I mean, that stuff happens all the time. Rarely does it get caught on camera, but it happens all the time. And again, I think a lot of people go into politics with delusions about what it really feels like and looks like to be under that. And at least if you're properly informed, you can prepare your family for the storm that's about to come.
Duly noted. James Moore, that's our show for today. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Jesse. Always a pleasure.
I can be emailed about anything you heard at jesse@canadaland.com, and I read everything you send. I've been posting a Blue Sky lately. James, where can people find you if they want to?
Usual socials, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, if people want to say hi, LinkedIn, and send a note. Happy to continue the conversation if people liked or didn't like what I had to say.
This episode is produced by James Nicholson, mixing and mastering by Caleb Thompson. Our director of audio is Max Collins. Sam Connert did the fact check for this episode. I'm Jesse Brown, editor and publisher of CanadaLand. Our theme music is by So Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca.
This is Kelly from the Peak Publication Society, SFU student-led newspaper. Recently, news organizations have been facing issues sharing news content. All news outlets, including small publications like us, have been affected due to Meta's refusal to comply with the Online News Act and compensate news companies. We have been serving our diverse student community for years and need your support to continue. If you'd like to contribute as a paid writer, illustrator, or photographer, follow us on Instagram at thepeak@SFU. Keep reading our stories at the-peak.ca. If Meta is listening, we're just a community promoting SFU events. Please don't block us again.